Welcome, Eagles, to another episode of Trad Cat Night Radio. I'm Eric Ajewski, founder and owner of Trad Cat Night, the most viewed and followed traditional Catholic website in the world, ladies and gentlemen. The number one ranked traditional Catholic website by Alexa specifically, a top 20,000 website. I want to thank you all for the past 3 years for all of your prayers and support. I can't thank you enough. Continue to spread word of Trad Cat Night to your friends, family, and church members. Continue to share articles. Continue to share these radio programs, which come to you Monday through Friday. Hit that subscribe button right now to Trad Cat Night here on YouTube. Click the notification button, that little bell next to it, because as you know, in this whole fight against fake news, YouTube has been censoring more of my videos. I had another one pulled down a couple weeks ago, so it's a constant battle with the mainstream media. Make sure you click that notification button. And if you can, please support this apostolate financially. Click the donate button. Sure do appreciate all your support. And today's talk is going to be another blockbuster. It's going to be a first-time guest, but it's a topic which we've covered here often enough, having guests such as Dr. E. Michael Jones, James Perloff, Mike King, Dr. David Duke, Dave Dionisi even on the show, and kind of breaking down Zionism. And there's so many different subtopics within this topic of this New World Order universal Jewish conspiracy to break down. And so I look forward to hearing from my guest today. But we can start off by the quotes from Rabbi Harry Wanton himself, who has said himself, since the Jews are the highest and most cultured people on earth, the Jews have a right to subordinate to themselves the rest of mankind and to be masters over the whole earth. He goes on further to say, the Jews differ from all the races because of Judaism. Judaism differs from all other religions because of Jehovah, and Jehovah differs from all other gods. He essentially breaks down Judaism to equating to communism or internationalism, the universal brotherhood of man, the emancipation of the working class in human society. Ultimately, folks, it's in the tradition of the church in terms of this end game, in terms of the Antichrist in the end being Jewish, which really startles a lot of people, because when I talk to a lot of Christians, they don't seem to realize that he will rule out of the Third Temple, which they are in the process of about to put together, which we'll get into that in a little bit, because Israel's asked Trump and Putin to have their hands in it. So I want to get my guests' commentary on that. I won't go into any more of these quotes. I mean, that's enough for now. I'll drop some more later. But today, again, my guest is Mr. Mark Dankoff. Many of you already know who he is because you had been messaging me and asking to get him on. And, of course, he can be seen all over the media, whether it's Press TV Iran, American Free Press, Christian News, Culture Wars. He's been seen on Veterans Today, working with Jonas Alexis, as I have, even in the past month or so. And now, Mark was a Constitution Party candidate in the year 2000, the U.S. Senate race in Delaware against Republican incumbent William Roth and Governor Thomas Carper. And again, since 9/11, he's been broadcasting himself, writing extensively on the issues of New World Order and Zionism. He has a website, markdankoff.com. Not sure if he's too active there anymore. He can elaborate. And I'm not sure if you're doing your broadcast still, but as far as I know, you were doing the Ugly Truth podcast as well. Perhaps he can get us caught up to speed on that. Mark, welcome to the show. First time guest. Tell us a little bit more about yourself. Clear up anything that I might have misspoken there concerning your introduction. And let's get rolling in terms of how you started getting involved exposing Zionism and the New World Order.
Well, it's a long story, and it's a story that can also be picked up in terms of an interview that the American Free Press did with me before their 2013 NASH conference in Austin. That interview is available on YouTube. So if you search Mark Dankoff and American Free Press on YouTube, you will find it. But to make a long story short, Eric, it was a situation where I had been a so-called conservative activist for years. All the way back when I was in grade school in Hawaii and then subsequently in school in the state of Ohio, I began to see that things were going wrong in American society back in those days. This was the 1960s and the early 1970s. It involved the sexual and drug revolutions. It involved all of the turmoil over the Vietnam War. It involved the Kennedy assassinations and the King assassinations, the assassination of Malcolm X, the attempt on the life of George Wallace and so forth and so on. So that was a fairly heady time to be growing up and be going to school in what was arguably at least a better educational environment than what exists today in terms of at least a semblance of difference of opinion that was being allowed for in the classroom, and kids being encouraged to think more about these things, to talk about them, and to formulate their own opinions as to what some of these things meant and mean. This took me, of course, into adulthood, where I happened to be a Lutheran clergyman, but for years I continued in the conservative movement on the side, in activism and so forth. But it wasn't until about 1988, when I was a radio broadcaster in Seattle, on a Christian radio station, also pastoring a Lutheran church there, and I was doing some work with the Republican Party in those days that I would not be doing today, by the way. But back in those days, I was a 36th legislative district chairman of the Republican Party in King County, Seattle for a while. Long story behind how that happened. But I began to get approaches from sources within the Republican Party, and frankly, sources from the Jewish and Israeli lobby organizations in the United States that suggested that they had concluded that they could find me potentially very useful in what they were doing. I think after one conversation with me, they decided that I wasn't that trustworthy a source, and so they dropped all of that. But I hasten to say that from 1988 all the way up through 2001, I was still slowly but surely groping for an explanation as to what was behind the larger events that I saw going on. Infiltration of American society, the infiltration of the American educational system and news media, the situation with our institutional churches, Roman Catholic and Lutheran and Protestant, in regard to all kinds of things that were developing that would have been unheard of in an earlier age, or seemingly so, and trying to find out for myself what really was behind all of this. And of course, we know both as Roman Catholics and as Lutheran Christians and as Protestant Christians that there is satanic activity involved in all of this, that it has eschatological or end times dimensions. But delving into that subject in the so-called New World Order begins to find us striking gold in terms of some of the things that you're talking about on the air so well, Eric, and that I've been talking about and writing about for some time. Jonas E. Alexis, Mark Glenn, Michael Collins, Piper, many of these other folks. And it's a situation where we today, I think, are still uncovering so much more. It's like the more we learn, the less we seem to know. The more we learn, the more research is required in order to delve into things that even some of the more experienced people in our movement have not run across before or have not fully understood. And in my particular situation, I've kind of been on the shelf for a while because I've been involved in the last 2 months in an emergency relocation to a place in San Antonio because the previous place had become uninhabitable because of leakage issues. And so I've been kind of taking a sabbatical where I've dipped my toe in the water once or twice in recent times. But I hope in this year, later this year, to be reengaged with Jonas E. Alexis at Veterans Today in particular, secondarily with podcasts like this one. I don't know yet whether I'll resume my longtime radio show or not. That remains to be seen. And I'm kind of in career transition in regard to what is going to be my basic income-producing situation in the next year or two. That's kind of up in the air. So I'm in transition. It's kind of a strange time for me, but it's also given me an opportunity to step back from all this and to read and to listen to everyone else's stuff at the same time that I'm keeping an eye on what has happened with the election of Trump and trying to figure out for myself what that might ultimately mean.
Now, before we jump into Trump a little bit, why don't you tell us what your findings was on 9/11? As most of us who have kind of looked into the whole Zionist question, we find that the mainstream narrative certainly doesn't hold. We've had on Chris Boylan, who's covered this extensively as well. I'm sure you're well aware of his works. But, I mean, what did you find on 9/11 specifically? We'll start there as a starting point, and then maybe we'll work into the quote-unquote Holocaust, because I know you're getting labeled an anti-Semite just as I have. I think some knuckleheaded writer at the Daily Beast called you an anti-Semite, and from my perspective, it's simply just you know, a farce wherein anyone who simply disagrees with what Israel is doing and or exposes certain elements behind what they're doing simply are just being labeled, you know, Jew haters, or, you know, I've been labeled, you know, the next Hitler or neo-Nazi and all this craziness. It's people can no longer think truly for themselves and have to play to this mainstream narrative. So let's start there with 9/11 maybe.
Yes, and for me, 9/11 was kind of a continuation of two other episodes in my life, one which happened before I was born, but I became very interested in both in grade school and in 1 year of high school in Hawaii, and that was the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor and the circumstances that surrounded it in 1940 and 1941, in the run-up between the memorandum of October of 1940, which FDR requested of Arthur McCollum, the head of the Office of Naval Intelligence, whole history behind that. And people can get to the bottom of more of that if they look for my own presentation on Pearl Harbor, which I made at the American Free Press Conference in Austin in 2013. So I had a great interest in Pearl Harbor, which took place, of course, some 14 years before I was born. And then, of course, the Kennedy assassination, the John Kennedy assassination, which I was alive for. I was in the third grade at that time. My father was an Air Force officer. He was studying at the Air War College. When President Kennedy was assassinated, we were living in Montgomery, Alabama at that time. And even at the age of eight, I began to get the uncomfortable feeling that there was something really wrong with what we were being told happened to Kennedy. That started me on a quest for many, many, many years. And this is going to sound very familiar probably to you, Eric, and to many other people who have been involved in this business. You start going down a road like that, and as you learn more, you feel like you want to learn even more. And there are so many fine people that have contributed to the efforts to really find out what happened to Kennedy. But it, for me, it was not until I encountered Michael Collins Piper right after 9/11, and he shared with me his book, Final Judgment, that I began to see the deeper implications of the Kennedy assassination and what I think has been the best overall explanation on a macrocosmic basis of who the ultimate players were in that. Then this gets into 9/11, doesn't it? And the whole situation with what happened in that circumstance. And to make a very long story short, since we are limited on time today, I would say that for me, there was a seamless garment that began to develop between the Japanese on Pearl Harbor, the Kennedy assassination in 22 years later, and then finally the 9/11 tragedy. And when we start looking at all of these things, we start underscoring that we have, I believe, in all three instances, a false flag situation, something that was created to look a certain way, that was explained away with establishment investigations, the Roberts Commission on Pearl Harbor, the Warren Commission on John Kennedy's death, and then, of course, the official quote-unquote explanation on 9/11. And in all of these instances, as some responsible researchers started pouring into this over time, there were simply too many things that did not add up. I was living in Philadelphia when 9/11 happened, trying to study for my last theological degree. And very early on in all of that, I began to hear rumors on the whole issue of 9/11 and began to get that same queasy feeling that I had had as a child, that something was wrong with it and that something there was a much deeper explanation behind it than what we were being told. And one of the things, not the only thing, but one of the things that began to come together for me on 9/11 was the same type of thing that began to come together for me as a much, much younger person, as a child in the 60s with the Kennedy assassination, and that is that there were too many scientific questions being raised. In the case of Kennedy's death, some of the forensic evidence that did not add up and some of the very, very effective criticisms of the official story about Kennedy's body and about the nature of the wounds and the positions of a gunman or gunmen, contradictions between the Parkland Hospital doctors and the people that came up with this military-supervised autopsy at Bethesda. This is the same type of thing that began happening with 9/11, where people who have the scientific backgrounds and educations that I don't have were starting to weigh in on this, and some of them had the courage individually and collectively to bear witness and testimony to the fact that they felt that scientifically alone, the official explanation on 9/11 was inherently impossible and ludicrous. And of course, much as was the case with the Kennedy death in 1963, the more I read and the more I took people at conferences who, again, in some cases had far, far greater scientific and academic regimen and acumen than I have, were pointing in directions which led me to ultimately come to the conclusions a few years ago that there was a direct Israeli connection to that. And in that regard, I would agree with it. Dr. Alan Sabrowski of the U.S. National War College, who said the same thing and said it on press television in Iran. Many other people, Mike Pye was weighing in on this, Mark Glenn of The Ugly Truth and others. And as I tried to compile all of this information from these various sources and to engage in what Francis Bacon used to call the process of weighing and considering. You know, you don't read to believe and take for granted, he would say, or to contradict and confute, but to weigh and consider. Look at the argumentation. Look at the various people presenting their arguments and their own evidence as to why they feel the way they do, and ultimately have to come to some conclusions on your own. I ultimately came to the conclusion that Israel was the major player at 9/11. And again, all of the reasons for that can be found in an interview that Karaj Ziabari did with me on 9/11 and Israel, when at that time he was working for the Fars News Agency of Iran. So if you search for Mark Dankoff, Israel and 9/11, this will come up. It'll give you all of the academic argumentation in this, presented not by me as the original source, but other people. And Dr. Robert Tsoungenis comes up as well in this, one of your traditionalist Roman Catholics. And he did a two-part series for Dr. Jones, Culture Wars. And I believe it was, the first one was the July-August 2012 edition. The second one was the September 2012 edition. And reading through that, and the Tsoungenis series was basically an extended review of Christopher Bolin's book on this subject. And when I started going through all of this and looking at the online WikiSpook site entitled 9/11 Israel Did It, it became increasingly apparent to me that that's exactly what happened.
Now, what about the whole questioner issue of the quote-unquote Holocaust? What do you think the significance is behind that event? Again, I've been labeled a Holocaust denier, and that's not really true. There's certain elements of it that certainly don't ring true to me, certainly how many actually died, the 6 million number. It seems like only 250,000 died, according to the American Red Cross and some other credible statistics. And then the whole gas chamber thesis, I think, is highly questionable. But why is it necessary for the Jews to believe, or get people to believe, the mainstream narrative on the Holocaust? Is this simply just to get everyone to feel sorry for Jews in general? Or, I mean, what do you think their play is there?
Well, yeah, there are so many different aspects on this. I have never actually written an article on the Holocaust. I have tried to familiarize myself with at least some of the literature that's out there that questions the official version of things. I think the thing that bothers me most about this Holocaust issue, and even Pat Buchanan got into the issue of the Zyklon B questions in regard to that whole issue in Auschwitz on the basis of science. I listened to David Irving a number of years ago in Houston, and the fact that he was developing a narrative which underscored that there has never been, in his words, any direct evidence that a centralized command order was given by Hitler to engage in this so-called massive genocide of Jews. So the historians have begun to question some of this narrative as well. The thing that is most disturbing about it to me is that aside from the whole issue of what one ultimately decides to believe as to what did or did not happen in this whole business of the Holocaust, quote unquote, that it has been used in a political narrative, it seems to me, to particularize this in regard to quote-unquote Jewish suffering in such a way Jews, quote-unquote, Israel, quote-unquote, is constantly cast in the light of being victim and not perpetrator. Sure. And that when one begins to question anything that involves the role of Jews and Jewish Americans in American society, or to question the American relationship with Israel that has existed for decades and what the implications are of this for our foreign policy, for our national autonomy, for pursuing our own national interest when that interest and Israel's interests diverge, which I argue is the vast majority of the times. Yes. Any time those types of things are raised, then it seems to me that this whole specter of the Holocaust comes up again in regard to indicating that people who are questioning the role of Jews and the role of things Israeli in American society, where the issue of Holocaust has not come up and is not even being talked about, that the Holocaust is conveniently brought back into the narrative in such a way that, as you've already pointed out, attempts to demonize people as quote-unquote anti-Semites, who either may do nothing more than question the final death count numbers in regard to the number of people that died in these camps. There has been a tremendous amount of historical revisionism on this that I think has been responsibly presented, that does question that. And if you simply question that portion of it alone, you are assailed as a purveyor of hate speech and as an anti-Semite, quote unquote, and all of these other things. And that can, as Jonas Alexis pointed out in his interview with me in Veterans on Veterans Today, where we were covering this reporter from the Daily Beast, who had basically labeled me and libeled me in this assault on me, and an assault on the circumstances that surrounded my U.S. Senate run in 2000, in some cases with blatant falsehoods, which I was able to formally repudiate. And then, of course, Jonas Alexis included some of that material in his interview with me. But in this instance, it was clear that the Daily Beast was interested in going after me because I was saying things on press television in Iran, in the American Free Press, and at conferences and on broadcasts and things of this sort, which were undermining the victimology line as it relates to things Jewish American lobbying organizations, Israeli organizations in the United States, and the provably disproportionate role of Jews in this country alone, in regard to all kinds of things, including the revolutionizing of our culture in a culturally misdirection. One of the striking examples of this that occurred in my own life was right after the Supreme Court's Obergefell decision, which basically legalized homosexual and lesbian marriage in all 50 states in this country. I was on press television in Iran just for a 5-minute segment, as I recall, either a day or two after the decision, and I simply mentioned that people should look at the friend of the court briefs that were filed with the Supreme Court of the United States, where this group or that group had a real interest in the outcome of this Obergefell decision. And clearly the friend of the court briefs that were being filed in support of the decision that the Supreme Court reached, thanks to Anthony Kennedy, a Reagan appointee, by one vote, were disproportionately being urged on the Supreme Court by Jewish organizations. It's right out there. It's provable. And Vice President Joe Biden, as I pointed out on press television at the time, Joe Biden was saying the same things I was saying as to the outcome of the Obergefell decision in regard to who played a disproportionate role in changing American cultural perceptions and mores and actions and legalities on this subject. Joe Biden, however, clearly his remarks in the Israeli media, was he happened to be in Israel at the time, as I remember this. He was pointing all of this out in a positive vein. I was simply pointing out, as a traditional Christian and as a moral traditionalist, based upon my Christianity, that this was an extremely bad decision, morally and spiritually. It was contrary to natural law, and it undermined clearly the older original intent jurisprudence of the Constitution in our courts. So merely for saying that much, of course, I was labeled as an anti-Semite. I was pilloried in the Jerusalem Post. Katie Zavodsky, I think that's her name, of the Daily Beast, went after me. And again, one of the things that traditionally comes up in this is not simply the re-invocation of things like Holocaust imagery and Holocaust terminology, but also there's a broad paintbrush stroke where anyone who is talking on these issues in the way that I've talked about them and the way that you talk about them is not simply pilloried as an anti-Semite, quote unquote, but then we are conveniently in many cases linked with people that we've had little or nothing to do with and may have our own serious disagreements with in terms of their credentials and the legitimacy of their argumentation and so forth and so on. I dare say that you as a traditional Catholic are coming at this much like Dr. E. Michael Jones of Culture Wars, much like me as someone who's been a very traditional conservative Lutheran pastor for years. We come at this, whether we're talking about the Obergefell decision or we're talking about our concerns about the New World Order in regard to eschatology, we are talking about this where our faith and where our understanding of Scripture and church history, patristics, the early church fathers, our respective church confessions all play a role in why we feel the way we do, why we evaluate things the way we do, that is not going to characterize other people in this so-called movement, quote unquote, that we have little or no sympathy with at all. But the Anti-Defamation League has been very successful in using this kind of thing, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, Middle East Media Research Institute, or Memory, all of these folks have been able to spin this narrative in such a way that suggests that all of us are neo-Nazis, all of us want to gas Jews, all of us want to create a police state in this country. All of us are basically the types of people that are virtual firebombers in American society. That is inherently ridiculous when you have the backgrounds of some of us, myself included. But this is the way the game has been played, and of course you've been victimized by this.
Yeah, absolutely, and who knows, folks, as crazy as it sounds, we may have a day where we wake up one day and we will literally be thrown in jail over questioning the Holocaust. That's happening internationally, folks. I don't know what the total count is, Mark, off the top of my head. I know at one point it was 16 countries, Germany included.
Yes.
If you just simply question the Holocaust, you're done. You know, it's a done deal. You're in jail, and we're trending that way, I would say, more or less, even here in the West. And to kind of add what Mark had already said in concerns to the Holocaust, yes, we do believe we're moving out of a Christian society into this new era they call it, the new civilization of love, these communists use. And there's no question there's a downplay of the real Holocaust, which was our Lord on the cross. But then also we have to take in consideration who is actually behind these communist, the communist movement, Leninism, Bolshevism. You know, the vast majority of these leaders were Jews, folks. I mean, this is not coincidental, as Dr. David Duke has pointed out in his work. But my next question for you, kind of moving ahead here a little bit, we'll try to move along. I'm here with Mark Dankoff. We're discussing the New World Order, the Universal Jewish Conspiracy. And we're going to talk about America now and Trump. With this past election, was this simply another illusion of choice situation? What do we have with Trump? I can tell you from the traditional Catholic world, it's pretty split, 50-50. There are people who think that he is just an outright puppet. You know, the mainstream and even the alternative news narrative on him doesn't hold given some of his relationships. One of his close handlers was a 33rd degree Luciferian. I forget his name. I think his name was Norman Peel. I did a whole two-hour talk with Dave Dionisi on him. But then there are others who would just say, well, you know, on the surface level, he's doing a lot of good things, which he is. I can't deny that. He's being very proactive. He defunded International Planned Parenthood. I mean, he seems to be, on a certain level, doing things as we would hope as Christians. But it's very concerning to see this connection with Israel and not in Netanyahu and Zionism. So I wanted to get your take on Trump, your assessment of America now, and then maybe even we can get into Putin a little bit. But what's your take on what's going on now?
In terms of the Trump situation, I was facing this, of course, as many of us were, who are and were registered to vote. Who am I going to vote for in this election? Now, of course, in this particular election, the failure to vote for Donald Trump was, in effect, a vote for Hillary Clinton. And we would begin to open a whole can of worms if we talked about all the reasons on this show why probably none of us, and maybe none of us, in fact, is in fact the case, could have possibly wanted to contribute to her election to becoming the president of the United States. She was clearly up front, publicly a very, very active individual as a Secretary of State in promoting the Israeli lobby. Her actions in Libya and the actions of the Obama-Clinton nexus in regard to the promotion of this civil war in Syria, which in effect is a war being, in my view, being perpetrated as the West and Israel and Saudi Arabia and some of the Gulf Cooperation Council states and Turkey have facilitated the importation of Wahhabic Sunni extremists into that country to overthrow President Assad and to damage the so-called Shia Crescent ranging from Iran to Syria to Hezbollah and Lebanon, chiefly because of the interest of Israel in doing this. So in this particular case, whether you're looking at Clinton's personal history, all of the issues that surround the Clinton Foundation and that surround her husband, you start talking about the horrible things that she did as Secretary of State. It was clear in my view that I did not want to win the election. And in terms of voting in Republican primaries, which I did this time out, Trump, ironically enough, seemed to be the least dangerous in regard to the fact that he was saying some things on immigration. He was saying some things in foreign policy that had a ring, close ring to the Pat Buchanan candidacies in the Republican Party in 1992 and 1996 in the primaries, both of which I supported, by the way, and then later became involved with Howard Phillips and the Constitution Party. But on the other hand, as you point out, Eric, historically, and Michael Collins Piper, there is an article out there which people can access. The late Michael Collins Piper, I think it was published in 2011 by the American Free Press. Piper writes about Donald Trump and his history and the history of his business connections and political connections, all of which is very disturbing, and which I was aware of at the time that I voted in regard to his longtime connections to people with overt Zionist interests and connections and identifications. So I had to make a decision. I did vote for him and was hopeful that that Trump, in terms of our relationship with Russia and pulling back from these incredibly dangerous things that the United States has facilitated with this coup d'etat in Ukraine, the outlandish policies that we've been pursuing with the Israelis and the Saudis in Syria, which have taken almost 500,000 lives and displaced millions of people. Trump's America First rhetoric and some of the things that he was saying about Syria and about President Assad led me to believe that I had to take a chance on him, as well as hope that in a new day in our relationship with Russia, that we would also pull back from these very dangerous NATO deployments and military exercises on Russian borders. But since Trump's election, I have to admit, I've been very, very concerned. He authorized a commando raid in Yemen that was completely ill-advised, that was a total disaster, They got a bunch of innocent people killed. There's not been that much publicity on it, but that's what happened. And the statements of Rex Tillerson, his Secretary of State, in regard to our policy with China and the South China Sea, seem to be setting the stage for a possible war with China over the Paracel and Spratly Islands. Then you get into the recent statements of James Mad Dog Mattis, his defense secretary, and also his national security advisor, Michael Flynn. And all of this seems to be taken directly out of the neoconservative pro-Zionist framework that we saw with George W. Bush. So I am just watching this with bated breath. I am very, very concerned about the direction that this Trump thing is taking in regard to the most recent statements made by Flynn and by Mattis and by Tillerson. And it may be that at the end of the day, we are still going to find ourselves in a global military conflict that is not in our nation's interest and in anyone else's, any other average citizen's interest either in other parts of the world. Yeah. And that's the great concern that I have in this, whether Trump is a deliberate conspirator in this, or whether Trump, who by his own admission, he is not, like Pat Buchanan was, an academic, a historian, someone with real theological depth to what he thinks about and writes about and talks about. And minus that, it seems to me that Trump, even if he's well-intentioned, gets into a place like Washington, D.C., and starts listening to the wrong people about who he put in these cabinet positions. And if he's listening to if the foreign policy advice he's getting from Tillerson on China and the South China Sea, and that he's getting from Mattis and Flynn on Iran in particular, are an indication of what he's actually going to do, we've got serious, serious problems. I'm very concerned about this. On the other hand, I was thrilled to see that he did pull back in the last day or two from this promise to move the American embassy to Jerusalem. Trump has at least started talking to Vladimir Putin again, which is a bit of a hopeful sign. But when you look again at people like Mattis and Flynn and Tillerson, and then you look at Nikki Haley being named as our ambassador to the UN, her rhetoric sounds as bad as Samantha Powers, her predecessors. So whether you're looking at Pat Buchanan, Dr. Philip Baldy of the Council for the National Interest, some of the things that Eric Margolis has written, I know Patrick Cockburn of the UNCE Review has several articles out there on Trump, including one that's the lead story at antiwar.com today that really gives me pause for concern. And the title of that article is War Against Iran, Good for ISIS. That's Patrick Cockburn of the UNCE Review. You can find it at antiwar.com. But the point is, a number of people on the right are looking at this, people who have no use for Hillary Clinton whatsoever, who are very, very concerned that Trump may well be in the process of being co-opted.
Yeah, and to kind of add to that, it's no conspiracy when the Jews come out and they say, from their perspective, that Israel controls the United States politically. We had way back in the 70s there, Senator Fulbright stated that the United States Senate is subservient to Israel. Israel controls the Senate. This has been demonstrated time and time again. And you had Henry Rosenthal in 76 talking about how he was just amazed how Christian Americans completely fall into the hands of Israel. And he just marveled at how the American people did not rise up and try to drive every Jew out. And then, as you've kind of mentioned on other shows, I thought I saw a show with you with Richie Allen talking about this, but in terms of presidential choice, this particular Jew, Rosenthal, said that the Americans have not actually had a real presidential choice since 32. And this is what we're talking about, folks. And again, we mentioned this, that truly the snake's head of this all in the New World Order are the Jews in general, objectively speaking. I'm not talking about every Jew on the subjective level, just talking generally speaking. But what calls to mind as you were talking there was Albert Pike's Three World War prediction, or however you want to spin it, when he's talking about how Zionists and Christians would come together to basically battle the Arab nations. And obviously, we've got the United States and Israel kind of going headlong, and now it seems with Iran. I think Iran, we need to to pay close attention to. But my next question specifically for you, Mark, is Jews and revolution in general. Many of us from the traditional Catholic world along the prophetic timeline before any semblance of Antichrist could show up onto the scene. As you know, the New World Order preaches out of chaos comes order. Well, there has to be chaos on every level, economically, socially, politically. So we've been waiting for a revolution here in this country, a revolution worldwide throughout Europe. And I think Trump is your guide to institute that. I mean, I said that if he did become president, that he would be pinned for this economic collapse to come. And I've had all the top economists on, and they agree with me on this. And again, they're not even Catholic per se. The bottom line is, at some point, I think everything will kind of just collapse. And we have these, you know, anti-Trump, Soros-funded protests being propagated. Now we see California trying to become a sanctuary state. It seems like they're trying to divide and conquer very quickly. What's your take on just the Jews and revolution in general, or revolutionary spirit, as Dr. E. Michael Jones calls it? Because it seems like we're headed towards that. Maybe it's been put off a little bit, a year or two, I'm not sure, but it seems pretty imminent now.
I would agree with that, and I have read Dr. Jones' book. I purchased it when it, as I recall, when it first came out, The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit and Its Impact in World History. He gives a depth of analysis of this biblically and historically that goes beyond anything that I've ever written, clearly. And when you read this and then watch what has been developing in more recent times, we seem to be, in terms of this developing military conflict in the Middle East and potentially in Eastern Europe and the South China Sea, and this whole issue of when the bubble is going to burst, in terms of what the Fed did a number of years ago and circulating all of these additional billions into the American economy to try and stem the tide of the economic crisis of 2008 and the and this this whole issue of the mortgage-backed securities collapse that transpired that facilitated at least some of this, all of the social and cultural tensions that we see going on in the United States and in the Western world on issues like homosexuality and abortion, immigration, both legal and illegal, and what kinds of people ought to be allowed to come to this country, what kinds of people should be kept out, what types of folks can we accept into our society who may be coming from a country or a group that overall we would not want to see take over our country culturally or demographically or politically. These are all compelling questions. And to me, the level of turbulence that is very self-evident in American society right now suggests that revolutionary forces are at work. Certainly Soros is not going away, and all of what he's doing and financing a lot of the things that are going on in the West right now that seem to be aimed at Trump specifically. But by the same token, we also see that just generally the potential is there for a brand of chaos and economic and political and cultural and institutional meltdown that would pave the way for the very type of acceptance of an authoritarian figure, both in this country and throughout the world, would approximate what we understand about biblical eschatology when it comes to the end times and to the eventual arising of Antichrist. So that's this is something I'm watching very, very closely. And of course, as people like you and I and Dr. Jones talk about some of these things, it is not an accident that we start talking about this so-called hate speech legislation. Yes. And you start talking about going all the way back to October 2004 when George W. Bush signed into law this so-called Global Anti-Semitism Review Act.
Yes.
This establishes a special department within the State Department to monitor global anti-Semitism, reporting annually to Congress. You start looking at the fact that this is actually on the books as a law in the United States, And when you read what's in this in terms of who is defined as an anti-Semite and as guilty of promoting anti-Semitism, quote unquote, well, clearly there are a number of things that are here that would cover virtually anyone who has ever said anything, however mild, in criticizing Israeli policies in the Middle East and in Palestine. Anyone who questions the role of the Israeli lobby in the American political scene. And here's one just for the Christian community to be thinking about, both from Catholic, Lutheran, and Protestant, that as you're reading through some of the specifics of this law, that if we assign blame to Jewish leaders and their followers, quote unquote, for inciting the Roman crucifixion of Jesus Christ, that this inherently makes us anti-Semites, then obviously by definition this law is saying that the witness of the Synoptic Gospels,
yeah, exactly,
and the Johannine literature and the Pauline literature and the Petrine literature is all inherently anti-Semitic.
Yeah, so, that's something I bring up, Mark, often. You know, I throw out 1 Thessalonians 2:14 through 16, and it's quite clear that the Jews killed Christ in that general sense. But what's interesting about that is with this infiltration of the Vatican II, by these certain Jews and Freemasons, that's exactly what's being propagated. It's a taking away of the blame from the Jews. That's been happening since the 1960s in your mainstream, quote-unquote, Catholic churches. So that fits perfectly with your number seven. I'm looking at what Mark is talking about. There's 14 bullet points that he makes in his Veterans Today article. Perhaps I'll leave this in the description box for you so you can all read it. But it covers everything that we've already just talked about, including the 6 million figure that we were talking about. If you question that, you're going to be in big, big trouble. Any derogatory statements about any Jewish persons or any Mossad involvement with 9/11. Folks, this is real. If you want to know who's really running the world, you need to start plugging your head into Mark's work, Dr. E. Michael Jones's work, James Perloff, Dr. David Duke. You better start to wake up now, because we're moving out of a Christian society into the New World Order, who is going to be headed by this Jewish Antichrist, reigning from Jerusalem, reigning from the Third Temple, as the early church fathers suggested. Didn't mean to cut you off, but we're getting a little bit shorter on time, and I had a few more questions, if I could,
sure,
to get to. You know, it's a kind of a question that comes through often, and, you know, you'll get different answers. I think you and I both agree that one of the latest Zionist boogeymans is this whole creation of ISIS. I mean, to me, as far as my research goes, it seems like a U.S., Israeli, even a Saudi Arabia, maybe a little bit, operation, you know, ISIS, Israeli Secret Intelligence Service. But is there, in your finding, any sort of Jewish-Islamic connection to the overall, let's just say, overthrow of Christianity in the Middle East?
Well, you know, that is an interesting question, which I am not an expert on, but I want to do more research in this area, because one of the things that I have seen published from certain sources that I think are at least credible enough for me to look into is going way back in history, and I am anything but an expert in Islam or Islamic history, these allegations that early Wahhabism, as that developed as a particular strain within Sunni Islam, had explicitly Jewish connections and origins to it. That's an area of future research for me. I can imagine Jonas Alexis will probably be delving into that at some time in the future with his work as well. But that's an area that I at least wonder about.
Yeah,
but certainly when you get into this whole question of Christianity, one of the things that is fascinating to me is that the co-optation of much of Protestant Christianity in the United States by the Zionist New World Order forces, who have confused some of these very fine people in regard to what biblical eschatology really does say on the subject of Antichrist, is the false notion perpetrated by the dispensational premillennial eschatology people, going back to what really is their origin. No, don't have to go back farther than the 19th century. John Nelson Darby and the Plymouth Brethren in the first third of the 19th century. Then, of course, later this business of the Scofield Reference Bible, mm-hmm, and the importation of the early earlier Darbyite eschatology into the United States, especially after the American War Between the States, by the Scofield Reference Bible, which of course was published by the Oxford University Press, which had a Rothschild connection. Now, when you look at the Scofield Reference Bible, I have written a paper on dispensationalism, which people can find at the older markdankoff.com website. And it was a graduate paper that was introduced at Westminster Theological Seminary in Philadelphia years ago, where I was in attendance for a time. And there, among the many, many things that we can talk about, the one thing we got to zero in on, for those who are listening who have any kind of theological orientation, is that I think the major deception, and we are talking about deception. Jesus uses that term constantly in the Olivet Discourse, where he is discussing end times matters. The ultimate deception, it seems to me, around which so much else has been built in regard to what has happened to our churches and to our society, is this notion, which I think is repudiated by the New Testament, that modern Israel is comprised of God's chosen people, quote-unquote. Once you assign to them the status of God's chosen people, then you can basically rationalize anything else that they and their supporters and their lobbying organizations do.
They can do anything, right?
Yes, I think it's very clear when we analyze the teachings of Jesus Christ and the fine writings of the Apostle Paul on this subject, it is clear that the New Testament teaches that in the New Testament time, the Israel of God is the confessing, believing church of Jesus Christ. This business of assigning a special status existing between God and a specific group of people based upon a racial or nationalistic identification, aside from their faith, aside from any faith in the Messiah, Jesus Christ, aside from their obedience to God's law and their obedience to God's covenants, this clearly is dangerous thinking that leads into all of these other deceptions that have co-opted so many of our churches. And one of the things that I find fascinating is that clearly in the Protestant circles, it has been the Scofield Reference Bible dispensational premillennial eschatology that has accomplished this this goal. Whereas when we look at the Roman Catholic Church, much like my background in confessional Lutheranism, there has historically been a cessationist point of view taught in regard to the ceasing of the special status of quote-unquote Israel in the Old Testament after the arrival of the Messiah, that the Israel of God today is the confessing Church of Christ. And yet, in the Roman Church, which seems far less susceptible to the dispensational heresy than the Protestant fundamental churches, nonetheless, it does seem to me, as an outsider with what I have learned of this chiefly through E. Michael Jones' writings, that the Vatican II situation was absolutely pivotal in bringing about the co-optation of the traditional Roman Catholic Church by elements who simply used different means of doing it. In this case, it didn't use the Scofield Reference Bible, and they didn't use Hal Lindsey and John Hagee, but they have used other means that chiefly seems to have reintroduced an element of this false teaching about the nature of Israel without going as far necessarily as the Scofield Reference Bible eschatology would. And of course, you're a Roman Catholic, Eric. You can advise me on this one.
It's a little more prevalent than people think. I actually just wrote a blog on this, how I still see from time to time people who are in traditionalist chapels who are not following Vatican II, that they still think and hold to this notion that your modern-day puppet state of Israel equates to the Old Testament Israel. And I just tell people, quit watching mainstream media. You know, quit following the mainstream narrative on it.
I think you've nailed it there, because there, that helps me in two ways. One, the modern state of Israel to me is not only not the Israel of God of the New Testament time, it has no necessary connection with the ancient Israel of the Old Testament. That's my own personal conclusion too. The other thing that you've identified is even with people in church bodies that have not been impacted historically by the dispensational premillennial teaching of the Scofield Reference Bible, they have in essence been preempted by the larger cultural preemption of the United States in this century, especially through the use of the educational system and the news media in a way that produces pro-Zionist presuppositions, even if the official theology of their church has never taught that.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. We only have a few more minutes here. I wanted to get your last take. I wanted to throw another comment in there. As you know, many of you know, we've talked about this often, Herzl went to Pope St. Pius X in the early 1900s, you know, asking for his blessing concerning, you know, a certain movement of the quote-unquote Jewish people back to the quote-unquote Holy Land. And Pope St. Pius X said, no, you rejected our Lord. We essentially reject you. I don't approve of it. And James Perloff just goes on to add and analyze that their next step was to infiltrate Protestant churches, which they did so successfully. But now, again, it's infiltrated, you know, with Vatican II, and it's just steamrolling out of control. But my last question for you is basically maybe we could talk a bit about how some researchers are indicating a connection between the Jews and inventing the whole, I guess we call it human rights scam, if you will, as a stratagem. One certain quote coming from Mahathir Mohamad, obviously not a Christian, but he said, "We are up against people who think they survived 2,000 years of pogroms not hitting back, but by thinking they invented and successfully promoted socialism, communism, human rights, and democracy so that persecuting them would appear to be wrong so that they may enjoy equal rights with others." The reason why I mentioned that, Mark, is there's someone on my radar who I think is the biblical Antichrist. His general name is Maitreya, and I think he's going to arrive on the scene probably in the next 5 years or so. But he's going to be the ultimate social justice warrior, the whole social justice movement, the impotent humanitarianism that Pope St. Pius X warned of this, the backbone of the one world religion that's forming. You know, the Antichrist must end poverty. He must end homelessness. He must be a proponent of environmentalism. Everything on that natural and materialistic level, if you will. Any thoughts, comments on that, just in terms of maybe the overall social justice movement? You know, this whole Masonic Marxist sham of, you know, equal rights, you know, we're now granting transgenders and sodomites equal rights. We're giving error public rights, essentially, which we know we can't do. Your comments in that area.
Well, it does seem that the New World Order ideology combines cultural Marxism on things like abortion, euthanasia, homosexuality and lesbianism, pornography, all of those types of things. You have almost a synthesis of that poison with the power of the global multinational corporate and central banking structure at the same time that maybe the third leg of the stool is the unthinking support of the masses for this quote-unquote human rights agenda, which is designed to break down distinctions between religions and cultures. It's designed to break down any nationalistic objections to being preempted by a globalist agenda that's being enforced at the point of a gun. And when you look at the way this is all out, and I recognize I'm on a traditional Roman Catholic show, so I want to tread gingerly here. I hope I don't offend anyone in saying this, but the statements of Pope Francis in recent times, as I have been reading about those, certainly suggests that he seems to be upping this rhetoric and this agenda to a whole new level that maybe suggests that what really began in earnest with the adoption of Vatican II might be accelerated in future times to a frightening speed and direction.
Yeah, well, trust me, you're not offending me. I've been on, when I go on shows, Mark, I label him as a high-ranking 33rd degree Freemasonic infiltrator. So I just put it out there for everyone. I know a lot of people in my camp are of the same frame of mind. They're teaching heresy. I mean, honestly, he's every bit of a Protestant as a denominational Protestant from our point of view. He's certainly not teaching Catholicism. And some of us would argue he's not even teaching Christianity. He's got a very weird and hazy version of who even God is, called the God Spray, which stems back to the Enlightened time. So very, very much Masonic in his belief structure.
And that would fit, you know, it. What I sense is someone who is emerging, getting very close, to, if not in, if in, in truth, embracing a universalism.
Oh,
He is
yeah.
certainly embracing a globalist agenda. And when you start talking about some of the comments that I have read about, he is apparently directed at Roman Catholic traditionalists at places like LifeSite News and so forth.
Yeah.
It's utterly shocking to me to read this stuff, not simply that what he says, but the manner in which he has said it.
Well, yeah, you have to remember, Mark, you know, the end game for these NWO agents is they've got to get rid of fundamentalists on every level. It won't even just be from the Catholic religion. It'll be anyone who just holds to the Bible, fundamentally speaking, as you know, other Protestant groups do. So when this false prophet character shows up, and in my opinion, he's not the false prophet. There'll be someone coming after him soon that he's just a setup for it, which in the New Age writings, they simply say that Francis is a puppet to them, and their guy, whose name is Yeshua ben Joseph, he's going to be sidekick to this Maitreya, says, you know, when they arrive onto the scene, it's basically, it's going to be that mark of the beast, that Luciferian initiation, and all fundamentalists must be, you know, we know we'll essentially be done away with. I mean, we know that's why they're building FEMA camps. We know ultimately from scripture that, you know, there'll be a chopping off of the heads, the martyrs. So, yeah, it really even extends above and beyond just Catholicism, but just any sort of, you know, fundamentalism from any of the other denominational sects from our perspective. But nevertheless, he's Looney Tunes. He's come out recently and said, you know, the communists make the best Christians. I mean, he's had just, I don't know how anyone could take him seriously. I mean, from our perspective, I don't know if you know this, I don't even hold him as the true pope. There's many of us who think he's a true anti-pope. There's been about 50 in church history. We believe the true pope is Benedict the 16th, and he's about to take off from Rome, which ties in with Catholic eschatology, because there's a long-awaited prophecy of a pope to flee Rome, which will essentially take the church with him. So the Catholic Church is not even going to be in Rome here soon, is what I'm trying to say. Well, Rome is going to completely apostatize. This New Age religion will be set up. Their five-step self-realization program. Benedict the 16th will be on the run with some conservative cardinals through Europe. In my opinion, it will end up in Portugal, as the message of Fatima, I think, indicates. So we got to close here, but I want to make sure that I get your shameless self-promotion time in, as I call it. There's no question that a new Tower of Babel is being created here, folks. God is not a globalist. I appreciate Mark coming on. I've got to get going here so we can get these videos uploaded onto all the different channels and outlets that we have. Last few minutes, why don't you give us, you know, any upcoming articles, projects, media appearances, and if not, then maybe just kind of summarize it.
Well, I've got a couple of things that I want to get re-engaged with in the not-too-distant future after my resettlement of my new apartment is finished. I want to read and review both of Jonas E. Alexis' encyclopedic volumes, volumes 1 and 2, entitled Rabbinic Judaism and Christianity. This is a terrific work. I'm basically promoting him, not me. But I'm glad to do so, and I want to get those books read and researched and reviewed. They're just absolutely incredible volumes. The other thing is that I hope, you know, later in the year, I can get reengaged with Jonas in a mutual review that we have going of the book Operation Snow, John Coster's book. The other thing, I think people may not be surprised that within the year, I might eventually be back and broadcasting again.
Sounds good. Well, we certainly appreciate you taking the time out, and appreciate your analysis, your insights. I sit back and just kind of absorb like a sponge, as I know our listeners are doing. And yes, folks, listen, we've got to continue to investigate this question. You can't take the mainstream narrative on virtually anything. And unfortunately, as Mark and I have mentioned, this whole notion of the puppet state of Israel equating to, you know, Israel of the Old Testament, it doesn't hold. You know, I always reference the Dewey Rames Bible, which traditional Catholics use. When Israel and Zion was mentioned, that was always equates to the church in general, as Mark had said. Obviously, Mark and I have a different interpretation of the church, but nevertheless, you understand what we're saying. It has nothing to do with a supposed puppet state of Israel, and it plays into this end time deception. My good friends, thank you for tuning in to Tradcat Night today. Make sure you spread word of Tradcat Night. Circulate this video to your friends, family, and church members. I appreciate all that you do. Thank you for tuning in, and until next time, stay safe. God bless.